I'ma say what I feel, and I promise to keep it real.
Welcome to the Red Room. Well, you gotta be a rider till your fears are diminished and the doubts are behind ya. It's hard to grind and the business got me stressed in the rent room. We let that shit up off our chest. You know the street nerd has got no time for no caca. Sass in class, yes, that's Mr. Bolakaja. Never have to guess when you're listening to Hilliard. He gon' bring more game than a shark playing billiards. It's all about the crap of screenwriting. It's exciting when you turn an outline into something enlightening. Your pen and words are like bullets in a gun. Write what you feel, say what you want.
Welcome to the Red Room.
What's the next
one? Next one is start as close as possible to the end.
What number is it? Five or six?
Five. That's five.
Start as close to the possible.
Does that mean like what I was saying before with the innocence, where it's like starts? Because it's start, because I know they always say start as close to.
Start late, like, and early.
Yeah. Because right. What they did there, which. Now I'm a new writer, but I'll just look at what my experience was of it, is that I felt like they started too late, because I didn't know what they meant to each other. I didn't understand the relationship with the father. Like, they said it, but I didn't feel any of it. So when stuff started getting crazy, I was like,
you're
okay.
Talking about that pilot?
The pilot episode. Yeah.
Right.
Well, I mean, look.
So what does that
mean? Look, I mean, like, I haven't seen it, but you're right. It's like, it's a very, you have to be able to decide this. And it could have been they wrote two scenes in the pilot that they didn't shot and then decided to edit out. Because they're like, oh, that's like, it's too slow when we see it. Mm-hmm. But, and that's the thing, too, that's really interesting about the process of filmmaking, is that a lot of times you got to write things and put things in the script to get everyone on board. Yeah. But when you ultimately film it, you'd be like, I don't need that scene.
Right.
Because, you know, perhaps in this thing, in Innocence, that's something that they did need. But a lot of times you'll read scripts and you go, oh, they took this scene out, or why did they take this scene out? Mm-hmm. Yeah. Because when you're filming it, and you never know this, it's kind of like we were talking about earlier with The Rock and the Ballers, sometimes the cast are so charming, you don't need certain scenes because they kind of like bring you in. That's kind of the point about like the old style movie star. Right. You know, like if I tell you you're gonna watch a Cary Grant movie, you just love Cary Grant. So
how come
you,
he never takes his shirt off though? What's up with that?
I don't know. But it's one of those things where you look at it and you're like, okay, he's the type of character that, because he's in it, his acting is so compelling. Mm-hmm. There's not as much story that needs to be told. But in this day and age, when people say there are no more movie stars, it's because people need to understand enough about the character to be able to be latched on. But right. they don't need so much about the character. Mm-hmm. That's where it's like, mm-hmm. Start later and later and later than possible. I mean, it's like, I'm trying to think about a movie. Well, okay, so, I mean, why, you always go to the classics because it's so interesting. But it's like, in Godfather, that movie starts in a place that's like, it's not the wedding day. Mm-hmm. The wedding is over. They're like at the celebration of the wedding when that's happening. You don't see the ceremony. You don't see them. You know, and that's kind of weird because it's like, yeah. You know, you show me a wedding. But see, it's not about the wedding. Mm-hmm. That the wedding is just the backdrop to show you.
So everybody else would have showed the wedding.
Yeah. Right. Yeah. You know, just to show you. The
movie's already long.
Yeah. Yeah. You know, it's to show you Don Corleone. Yeah. You know, and that little scene. See, and everyone would quote that scene in the beginning when he's like, I love America. And it's just pulling back and telling you shit. Because mm-hmm. It's like, it's creating a, and it's not even cutting. It's just on him pulling back. Okay, you give me a monologue, and I don't even know who you're talking to. Mm-hmm. You know, and the minute you flip over to Corleone and he's listening and you're like, oh shit, now something's really crazy happening. It's like, it came in at such a strong point of, and when that's happening, you don't even hear the wedding shit going outside. But when they do cut outside, yeah. This is a big party. It's like a damn band there and shit like that. So it's like a weird kind of trick in the filmmaking. But it's like, you have to just say, when do I come in? It's always tricky. And you never know until someone's told you.
Here's what I used to always teach. Like, because this ties into, like, you know, start late, end early thing. Is And I know I'm using the detective thing a lot because it's it's very simple because procedural is always in a procedural way of doing things. It's very it just makes it simple.
Mm-hmm.
So, for example, a younger writer would do this. So there's two cops, you know, they're sitting in the car. They get a call, you know, from dispatch and they're like, you know, there's somebody was shot at the corner of Hollywood and Vine, right? A younger writer would show the guys in the car. They'd probably stop and get some coffee or some shit. You know what I mean? They go to the place. They get out the car. They knock on the door. Hey, we're here to see Johnny, right? A more advanced writer would be the cop sitting in the car. They get the call and dispatch, corner of Hollywood and Vine. And the next time we see them, they're at the door going, right? Johnny opens the door. We're here to pick up Johnny, right? Now, this is a very simplified way of doing it. See, I skipped all those other things.
Yeah.
I told you where I was going. So the next thing to do is to get to the place.
Yeah, just push it, yeah.
You see what I mean? So that, to me, is one of those things. What I'm hearing in that, give me the question with the answer.
Start,
the,
yeah, it's start as close to the end as possible. Okay.
So that's the other thing is a lot of people, when you're writing a pilot, for example, there's in a movie, where you start is where the fuck you want to do it. Your job is to find the smartest, best, easiest way to get into the character in the story, to draw them in and all that shit like that, which is why most people today use the trick of, let me show you a cool action scene that happens and come back 6 hours earlier, or whatever the fuck, 6 hours later, or 24 hours later. You know what I mean? They do that intentionally because you needed to start on an action. So let me show you that action scene that happens on page 43, and then I'll come back to that later. You know what I mean? It's a way to grab you in so that you hook the audience early. You
well,
know
yeah,
I mean?
And essentially, if that action scene is happening on page 40, they're really you're starting on page 40, and then you're backtracking to page one. So you're really starting. So you're starting 10 pages before the end, as opposed to, you know, like 50 pages before the end. I mean, yeah, that's a definite trick. I mean, it's something that goes with everything. It's like every scene needs to start as close in as possible, and the story and your script needs to start as close as possible. I mean, like scene wise, it's like, you know, it goes back to your thing about the detective. You heard about the murder in Hollywood and Vine. You know, I mean, the thing you could do, you started later is they get in the car, they drive, cut to, you know, like they're now. Interviewing witnesses. Did you see this? Did you see this? You know, blah, blah, blah. You know, I don't even need to see the body. I can just, you know, have you seen so-and-so? What happened to so-and-so? He's dead. See, like this. And they could be showing a crime scene photo. Because that's like getting, and now the drama's starting. Because one thing that happens, a lot of writers do, I was going to do this of myself so many times, is you want to start like trying to recap a scene. Mm-hmm. Or you're trying to put a scene or to give context to that scene to what came before. Why do that? What came before? Like, that is the context of this scene. Like I have a scene in this pilot where this guy, he went to this convention and some wild shit at a convention and his wife didn't come. And his wife was kind of salty that she couldn't come to the convention. And then what happens is when the wife comes home, it's like the scene where he's sitting there in the house like, oh my God, today was the most wildest day I went through in my life. And then the door opens to the garage and his family comes in.
Mm-hmm.
And he just sees them come in. The next scene is he's already explained everything to the wife what happened at the convention.
Mm-hmm.
And now it's like, and so, yeah, so it turned out okay. When he lied to her about, because we just saw some crazy shit happen. And he's like, oh, yeah, it was an easy day at the convention and blah, blah, blah. She's like, okay, cool. Well, then what's the next move? And it's like, even though I was first writing and I was like, he's got to explain to her how crazy it was and blah, blah, blah. And I was like, why? Why? Because we, the audience, know how crazy it is.
But so you gave us dramatic irony where the audience knows something that the character that
too.
Doesn't know.
Yeah. Yeah. Right? That exactly. too. Because he's, and that also, this helps you understand the character is that earlier on in the pilot, he's telling his wife says to him, we can solve, you know, we can face everything together as long as we're honest with each other. Something she says,
you gotta set that up.
You know, he says that's the first scene with them together.
Right.
And then he's now lying his ass off to her because he knows that if he told her what really happened, she'd be like, stop all this shit. Stop it all now. Mm-hmm. Done. Stop it all. Yeah. So, yeah, that's the start as late as possible.
Just give me an idea for mine. That's
okay.
Number six.
Be a sadist. No matter how sweet and innocent your leading characters are, make awful things happen to them in order that the reader may see what they are made of.
Okay. So this goes into what we're talking about for your pilot with your character. Because you made them timid and all these other things, you're not thinking sadistically, if you will, right? So that's why I said that, like that bus moment that we were talking about, if that was a way to show that there's another side to them, and here's another thing, maybe they're timid because of some shit that happened to them before. Like they refuse to ever pick up a gun because they killed somebody. They refuse to ever hit somebody because they hit somebody and they fell off a building. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So you realize, oh, that's why they're timid. They're not just timid because they're shy and quiet. They're timid because they did something bad.
Did something bad. Yeah.
You see what I mean?
Yeah. And that, yeah. I mean, the sadist thing is the biggest thing. I mean, it's like, you know, this is one of the things I don't like about romantic comedies, and romantic comedies are kind of like the best at being sadistic with their characters. But it's in a lot of movies. It's kind of like the character is going to do something that you know is going to fuck them.
Mm-hmm.
And they're like, God damn it! Like, why'd you do that? And to me, I watched it at home, and I was like, I don't want to watch right now. I don't want to watch because I don't want to see the character go through the pain.
Right.
And you got to put them through the pain, because how they get through the pain. That's where the cleverness is. How do you cleverly get through a bad situation that's going to happen to you? Because if you can do that, then, you know, it shows you a lot about the character, advances the story, but also puts them through something harsh. Yeah. And being a sadist is like I said, it's like in romantic comedy. Think about it in romantic comedies. Like, that's the thing that where you're able to do it. What's the one? Is there something about Mary that his dick gets caught in the damn zipper?
Yeah.
It's like, that's some shit that you know is a guy. You're like, fuck, that would hurt.
Right.
Yeah.
And it's happening in a funny movie.
Right.
You know, because as they
or even the come on the hair.
Yeah, come on the hair. Yeah, you're like, oh fuck. And when she knows those, that is, right. It's gonna be crazy. But it's like it's like the Dave Chappelle thing is like. Everything is funny until it happens to you. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. So, it's so important. I mean, but your character that people don't like, the guy you think is the victim, he's not responding to the bad things that's happening to him. If anything bad happens to your character, you gotta you gotta put them through what that is. Like, they gotta solve that problem. In a way that makes us, it's all tied together. Mm-hmm. It advances the story, and it makes us root for them, and it shows character. That's how you solve like an obstacle. And the thornier, sharper, more dangerous the obstacle is, that's what makes you go fuck. It's easy to do that in a horror film,
right?
Because it's like fuck. But when you do it in non-horror films, that's why everyone likes those movies. You know, again, like romantic comedies or just straight comedies. It's like they, you know, shit happens to them, but you're like, fuck, man. You get to go. That's you're gonna get out of that.
I was just thinking about and this is depending on what genre, you know, the pilot is you're writing. But as an example, like. Your character could be hella passive, getting bullied by people, like all kind of shit is happening. You keep wondering, why the fuck isn't this character doing anything? And then, like, act three, all of a sudden it's nighttime, and they put on their mask, and they sneak out the window, and they show up at the bully's house and beat the shit out of
the bully.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And go back, and they don't know who did it, and they're right back to being a nerd again. You know what I mean? You're like, ooh.
Yeah.
This dude, right? You see what I mean?
Yeah.
It's about tricking the audience into something.
We have to have a conversation, because this all feels like new to me, because I've been trying to figure out right now how to do that, because I'm going to tell you a little bit about my character. He is more timid because when he was younger, his mother was going to give him up for adoption. And basically what she did is, because he fucked up, he did something bad, and then she took him to an orphanage, left him there for a week, just to show him she's not playing with him, yep. and then picked him back up.
Oh, that's like the old Alfred Hitchcock trick.
Yeah. So.
Okay. So now I'm curious to know what happened at the orphanage.
Well, the orphanage, yeah.
Because, you see what I mean?
See, yeah.
Like what bad happened there?
Because that's. I mean, look.
I never thought about that
point.
But that has to be what's traumatizing him. Not the fact that his mom put him there. It's what happened there. Was he molested there? Was he beat there? You know what I mean?
Right. Because an orphanage is an orphanage, for lack of a better analogy, is that's like jail for kids.
Exactly.
Yeah. In a certain sense, and what we know about jail is even if you don't get raped or shit like that, you see shit that changes you.
Right.
That you can never not forget. You're like, oh shit.
Right. A week could feel like a year in a place like
that. Yeah. Yeah, because the Hitchcock thing is, the Hitchcock says the reason why I do suspense films and crime films and the Wrong Man films is when he messed up as a kid and his dad took him to jail and they put him in a jail cell for like a few hours. But he said it felt like days because he's like just a little kid and nothing really happened to him except for the guards walked by and said, ah, kid, you're going to have to get used to this life. And he's just like,
Yeah,
they were just scared straight in his eyes.
Yeah. But you know, it's like, you know, for instance, I'll go back to It because I just saw this. In It, the fat kid, he's getting bullied in this one scene, and there's, you know, and these four kids are harassing him and shit like that. They've been harassing him a little earlier in the movie, and then the one kid pulls out a knife and starts cutting his stomach. Like, I'm gonna just carve, you know, like he's gonna carve his name into his chest, and even the bully's friends are like, you're taking it a bit far, you know, and they're cutting him, and he's like, tell me what to do. And then the kid, who's got beat up before and everything like that, at that point, he goes, fuck this, and he just kicks that guy in the nuts who's cutting him, because he kicks him so hard in the nuts, and he's leaning against this fence, he, like, flips over the fence. But you know that was a hard kick in the nut for him to send himself over the fence. And he rolls down his big ass head and all getting beat up and shit like that. And you're like, that's being sadistic because he got his damn gut cut. You know, because he's kind of fat. He's like, I'm gonna cut those tits off like pig boy. And you're like, Jesus, that's some crazy ass shit.
But that's why you have to watch that shit.
Yeah, because
you need to see what level they're taking it to.
It's funny because that's, I think, what it is. I have to learn how to like more dramatize more.
Yes,
because you gotta my mother.
You gotta turn shit up.
Yeah, I love my mother. She's super supportive. But I did have a situation when I was a kid where she didn't drop me off at the orphanage, but she told me to pack my clothes in a garbage bag and basically went on errands as I'm in a back seat waiting to get given away.
Right.
And for me, that was super traumatizing.
Oh, I'm sure.
But see, to me, that is something he could be having flashes of throughout the whole season.
The thing.
Like we never see the entire thing until the end. Just little pieces throughout the entire season. You see that little moment of
the pilot.
But you need to be focusing on what's the important thing you want to show.
Yeah.
All the way up to the fact that he gets there, he gets to the door, and the door is open, and we're like, what the fuck is in there? We don't know till next week. You know what I mean? Just give us little pieces.
But that's only the backstory. Also, that's the part.
Well,
we learn about him.
Have you seen Sharp Objects?
I you know what? I blame myself. I've been wanting to, and I've been looking at it, but I haven't yet.
Okay, so Sharp Objects is interesting because
that's a new series, right?
Yeah.
Amy Adams.
Jean-Marc Vallée, who directed Buyers Club and Pretty Little Lies last summer. He does this, and it's like you meet Amy Adams. She's like a reporter who's an alcoholic, and she has to go back to her hometown where she escaped from, small town in, I think it's Missouri, some shit like that. Mm. And it's fascinating because wherever she goes, she sees this in the way it's edited. And I got the script the other day, so I don't know how it's written in the script, but it's like you see these flashes of when she and her sister were kids and they were doing stuff that was kind of just regular kid stuff. Mm-hmm. But then you would see something would happen where it was like, whoa, something's not right there. Like there's a scene where one of the early scenes walking on is that they're walking upstairs and they're about to walk into their mom's room. And it's just these flash. They're maybe like, you know, like 12 frame shots or think real fast cuts. You don't really get a chance to get your bearings. And you see her put her foot like over her mom's the floor to the mom's house, you're just like, oh, she's not even supposed to go in that room. Like, you know, right. there's a level of what, and people who live in houses where their parents say you can't even go in a room, there's some abuse going on in that household. And then next thing you know, she's like drinking a lot of liquor. You know, she's really putting down the vodka. So, you know, it's like it's affected her, and her childhood really traumatized her, you know? I mean, it's but it's interesting to look at because you see it's like he's dropping these crumbs of backstory.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. All just the in crumbs. The pilot.
Just crumbs. You know, that keep you interested. Like, I need to know more about her. I need to know more about her because there's not enough in the pilot with the main story. She's coming to her town to investigate a murder. Mm-hmm. And it's like, okay, whatever. But that's not enough.
Yeah.
And it's like this other stuff. Like, she's going back town and her mom is... There's a lot in that pilot that makes you go, okay, now I want to watch more of this. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. I believe it. What it is also is I have to get more comfortable with flashbacks because, you know, a lot of people have rules about flashbacks and it gets scary because you don't want to be the one who puts a flashback in that makes you look...
Just make them nice and concise and tight. Yeah. Problem is, where I have a problem with them... is people go into them, and it's got nothing to do with the story. You know what I mean? Like, make it come when it needs to come. Mm-hmm. Like, for instance, say he's on a bus. I'm just using an example because we used it before. say he's on. Let's just use it. Or yeah, let's say he's on a bus and a homeless guy sits next to him and he's got a bag in his hand. Mm-hmm. And we see him look at the bag, and from the bag we go into a flashback of his mom taking him, boom, putting his bag there in front of him. And she's like, you get in trouble one more time, we go into the orphanage, whatever the fuck.
Put all your shit up in there. Yeah, right. Yeah.
And
yeah.
we see her just piling, and we're like, what is she doing? What is she doing? And we realize she's like taking him to the orphanage. You see, this is like little, and then we come back, and he's like back. And it's just moments. Little.
See, people tell you.
Transitions. They got to be clean.
The reason why people always say avoid flashbacks is it goes back to our previous point about start the story as late as possible. When you're flashing back in time, you're trying to start the story back farther.
Right.
And because you don't feel comfortable enough with how the main story's going. Mm-hmm. I mean, somebody like Breaking Bad is flashing forward, you know, with that moment, and then taking us back.
Mm-hmm.
But that's, I mean, so in essence, the whole show is a flashback in the pilot until you get there. But not necessarily. But, you know, like flashbacks, when they work... It's just like voiceover. When it works, it tells us something that the story wouldn't be able to tell us otherwise, you know?
And what we're seeing is not the exact same thing that they're talking about.
Yeah, well, that's the great thing, too, about flashbacks. That's
the hard thing.
Is that you're going to be the unreliable narrator, which you can do in a flashback because it's how that character experienced an event. Not necessarily how the event happened, you know, and that's like a thing too. Because then later on, you could talk about the flashback, and she could be like, "That's not what happened at that moment." And then, then there's a revelation for the audience and for the character, you know. And then it becomes, "Oh shit, does this person not know how to remember events right?" And then it makes you now more curious about that person because then you're like, "What else do they get wrong if they don't? If their memory's suspect?"
Right. Because trauma makes you believe things differently.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? So thinking about that. What we got? What's next?
Point 7. Write to please just one person. If you open a window and make love to the world, so to speak, your story will get pneumonia.
Agreed. Okay.
That sounds sickly.
Here's how I look at that one.
Mm-hmm.
And I've been saying this for years. And maybe it's because I used to read. I write for the reader. Now, some people write for, you know, the producers and, you know, whatever their thing is. I write for the reader because what I've learned, no matter what company you're at, no matter who your friend is who says they're going to read the script, if they're a big producer, their assistant's reading it, right? And then they read it. You know, we have friends who will take the time to read, but usually they're like, here you go, read this thing right quick.
It's other writers,
So I have learned for myself, I write for them. I write for them in a way to where they go, wow, dude, I need to pass this on, you know, to such and such producer. So for me, what's the question?
It's like, write to please just one person. If you open a window and make love to the world, so to speak, you'll sort of get pneumonia.
Too many people focus on trying to For instance, if your movie is in the LGBT world,
yeah.
you're trying to appease everybody in there to appease them. And then your character may be black or Latino or whatever, so you're trying to appease them.
Yeah. Right?
Mm-hmm. So focus on the people you're were one person you're really trying
yeah,
to appease.
Yeah, because think about it. If your movie is in the LGBT world, you might say, I'm just going to tell the T world
right.
of that. If I try to fit all the other things in there, yeah. then I got to, you know, I got to service their story. Yeah. Or I got to be... It's the thing that I see is happening with happens with a lot of movies in the last 5 or 10 years is why they're bland. This just has to do about stories being bland. Mm-hmm. Is that they're trying to appeal to all these audiences. Right. And something that is going to appeal to a 10-year-old is not going to appeal to the 65-year-old mm-hmm. grandmother.
Mm-hmm.
But movies, because they're such expensive bets, they're trying to make them fit into that. They won't. I mean, like, to me, like, this is what I thought was the problem with Avengers Infinity War.
Mm-hmm.
I was like, you trying to make sure that everyone who watches this movie is going to love it.
Right.
So
therefore, there's really no violence in this movie. But that's a violent... The actions are inherently violent yeah. in that,
right.
but you didn't show me any violence in the thing. Like, mm-hmm. like all these people fought and died, and they died in like the snap.
Mm-hmm. Oh, okay,
yeah, and I was kind of like, okay, now if these guys are really saying, you know, fuck the little 5-year-old and fuck the 65-year-old grandma, I'm gonna make a movie for like, you know, this 15 to 25-year-old audience. Like, that's my core audience. Then Captain America would have got killed on screen.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
In that battle, he would have been like cutting. You would have killed right. him. It wouldn't have mattered because you know they're going to come back because of the reverse of the thing.
Of course.
But you kill people like strongly like that on screen, the audience is hit a lot harder. Like, oh damn, I didn't know you gonna kill Cap that way. Right. Fuck.
Yeah.
And it's more memorable. But it's like, well, I can't kill Cap that hard, and I can't kill Black Panther that hard either because mm-hmm. we just
yeah, I was you know, a dick on it with me in the room.
You know what I'm saying? Because then people are gonna get mad.
Yeah.
But it's like that's where you're trying to appeal to money to people. That's why I think a lot of times you look at these 80s. Horror films or action films, why action films have a hard time working now is because they weren't afraid to...
Shout out to the Russo brothers. Yeah. They pay me. How y'all... No, love y'all motherfuckers.
Hey, look. They make great movies. That's... You know, that's not a shout on them. That's like... That's probably Marvel telling them.
Right.
But I can't keep putting a movie made $1 billion. What the fuck, you know? But if you look at an action film in the 80s, right... Like, those movies are very specific. Mm-hmm. They're not trying to appeal to women. They're really not trying to appeal you know, to people of color either.
Mm-hmm.
You know, like, we ain't trying to do this.
Right.
But that's why those movies have a certain kind of edge to them. You start, you know, I got to appeal to women, I got to appeal to people of color and everyone like that. Then it's like certain kind of films certain kind of stories can't bear that weight because mm-hmm. That's not the way the intention of the story is. So you got to make that movie slightly differently,
right.
you know.
It's an interesting thing, actually, that point, because the pilot that I am working on, it's kind of I've held on it for a while. I've literally done it 3 times, and the second version I did when I did a table read, I had a trusted friend, a girl who's awesome, and she's the one who tells me the truth. She has the blunt truth that I needed, and she asked me. At the end, she said, is this the story you want to tell? Because understand that this is what I'm saying. And basically, how she saw it was me going against the black community. because my protagonist is black and gay. So she saw it as going against the black community and said, is this what you want to say? I had a specific intention for it. And I guess it wasn't for anyone, for a specific person, but more... to show a light of what I experience in around certain situations. And so I guess the certain actions that he got in, she saw the symbolism as being something like
anti-black. Negative.
Yeah, it was like anti-black. But I was like, no, it just happens with this protagonist goes through these certain things, these bad things happen, but it's not because he's black that they happen. It's because I want to show basically why he may be more cautious of his emotions, because his emotion caused certain things to happen. So, like, to be careful of how you... I know, it was a very complicated thing where just, like...
Well,
like, okay. Between people, myself, what I want to say, what people interpret it, and...
Well, couple things in that. One, you don't... You are telling the story that you want to tell. As long as you are true to that story's premise and the promise of what that's suggesting, then that's your barometer of, did this story work the way I want to do it? The difficulty, the minefield that you're having to navigate is that you're writing a black story. And what I mean by that is because what I've noticed is because there's so few black stories told cinematically, there's always the question, if black people have been portrayed so negatively in mainstream media, mm-hmm. that what happens is when you write black stories, it's difficult to write them and then to be black and then to castigate our race. Because then people look at it as like, why are you tearing us down?
Right.
Yeah.
But I'm kind of like, we shouldn't look at ourselves as sacred cows. We can't view ourselves as, we can't be criticized, you know?
Yeah.
And so therefore, it seems to me that your friend is saying to you, I don't think you should tell this story because it's going to make black people look bad.
Basically, in other countries, yeah, because I did see I think it was a news thing. It was one of those YouTubers who went to like China and was like, what do you think about black people? And they all had these negative things to say. And then they were like, have you ever met a black person? No. Well, how do you know these things? Media, like film. So that affected me in a big way. And that's why when she said that, it kind of erupted something in me where it was just like, am I doing a service? You know, it gets, because all my experience is a lot of black people. So I see the good, the bad, the ugly, but I never wanted my protagonist to represent the ugly.
We're getting late, but it's the same thing where I was interviewing these guys last night and I was trying to get to the heart of, you know, three white guys wrote this movie. I mean, it's about a white family in a black neighborhood and most of the other characters are black. And I was just trying to get to the heart of, you know, have they had any pushback or whatever. I thought they pretty much really nailed, you know, lingo. And I mean, it was on, wouldn't you say? Mm-hmm. I was actually fairly impressed. And I was starting to say, you know, as a black writer, I don't have a fucking issue with it. If you guys nailed it, you did your research. It felt authentic to me.
It felt awesome.
You know what I mean? But I thought I was getting a little bit of pushback. Would you say? A little bit.
Yeah.
I was getting a little bit of pushback. I think they were a little intimidated by that. You know, and that wasn't where I was going. I was really just trying to see, like, had this been 5 years ago, we probably wouldn't even been having this conversation, you know, even 10 years ago. But now we're at a point now where, you know, some of our friends are like out there going, no, they shouldn't even be doing that at all. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? And you and I are like, if you motherfuckers nail it and you came up with it first, go with God.
Write the story. I mean,
you know what I mean?
It goes to my thing about there's a crystal around black stories right now.
Right.
I mean, and it's like Precious.
Mm-hmm.
I don't think Precious would get made today.
Oh God, no.
Oh yeah, no.
Yeah.
Because Precious is like such a scorching view of our community.
Yeah.
That we're like, we don't need to have that. Since we can control our stories, mm-hmm. we're not going to show that shit.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And that's the thing. It's like the dirty laundry of the black community doesn't... there's going to be people who are going to be mad if you show the dirty laundry of black community.
Mm-hmm.
But it's like, you know, what's that? Is a black boy? Yeah, or native... Is it a black boy or native son? Mm-hmm. But one of them, it's like you read it and it's like just the... opening pages are just like, God damn, this poverty for black people is really fucking bad,
right, yeah.
You know? But it's like, that's the world.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, are you trying to shy away from that because you don't want to mm-hmm. show that anymore? or and so that's that nuance. But you're saying a different nuance. It's like I'm showing something about like this gay experience with the black community has said this. But we know in general that the black community is a lot more conservative mm-hmm. about gay issues
yeah.
than the community, yeah. than the mainstream.
Some of them church people are the worst.
Yeah, the mainstream America. Right. You know, so you're going to get that pushback. Mm-hmm. You're going to get those questions about should you be telling this story? Yeah. To me, it's kind of like,
that's what intrigues me.
Yeah.
I'm like,
let me tell the story. Because guess why? You're telling me I shouldn't.
Right.
That means I hit a nerve with you, and that means that I'm hitting nerves with people, and that means as an artist, I'm on the right track because I'm hitting people's nerves.
Are you hitting nerves or are you on the nose?
Right.
And that's what you have to get to the core of is are you preaching? Are you going, look at this shit, this is bullshit? Mm. Or are you going, this shit is, look how real this is? Like, we were talking about Pose, right? I don't know if you got further in. You've been watching it, right, Pose?
Lord knows I wish I was.
Okay.
I need cable.
Okay. There's moments where, you know, most of the characters are, you know, fully, you know, trans, you know, whatever.
Yeah.
And I don't mean whatever is in whatever. I'm just generalizing.
Yeah.
And one of the characters like goes to a club, a bar, and it's like all, you know, gay bar, it was white bar, and they don't want her kind in there, right? This is 1987, right? And she's like, I don't understand. We are all gay people. You know what I mean? How is this not a thing? And they were like, we don't want your black ass here, right?
Identity politics.
So let me take it up another notch, right? So they did this in a way that wasn't like, it was showing you truth though. It was showing you reality. I remember going to San Francisco and having that experience at the Midnight Sun, which was the preppy, you know, white bar that, you know, type of dudes that I like. So I show up in there and they're like, I don't know if
you're out of here.
You're supposed to be in here or not.
Yeah.
You know, you could just feel the tension wasn't right. You know, even though people probably thought I was cute, but still it was like, you need to go across the street to the such and such.
Right.
You know what I mean?
Right. Yeah.
Down the street, like where the riffraff is at. You know what I mean?
It's funny because my show I'm writing now, that's initially what it was around. Mm-hmm. It was my experience as being a gay black man in the gay community and the negativity that people pretend isn't there because, of course, I'm literally part of two black and gay, two different communities where I have to be, like what you said earlier, like kind of have the diamond around it. Everything's great. We're good. I can't talk about anything I'm experiencing that I may not like. And mind you, the pilot wasn't anything towards black. It was more towards gay. It was just experience the black guy was having made it like.
But if he's always the victim, then that is, for example.
But then again, I did have the victim.
Right. And see, like, for example, we were talking about when I wrote Black Wall Street, right? I made it so the shoeshine parlor was a neutral place.
Yeah.
Whereas, like, if you were in the gay club, right, the black gay club, it would be like the ballroom. It's a neutral place where they can be themselves, laugh, have fun, and whatever's on the outside of the world does not exist.
Mm-hmm.
You got to have those moments where they're having fun, where life is actually good within this little bubble right here, so that when they go outside and we see the world is actually doesn't like that, we understand more and we're with them more, as opposed to every time they get in a situation, it's a negative thing because he's black and he's gay.
Yeah.
You see what I mean? You got to have moments where you go and go, oh, wow, man, I almost wish I know people like that. I almost wish I could be there. You see what I mean?
Yeah.
You got to have those moments where the audience wants to go on a ride with you. They don't want it to all be somber and sad.
You modulate.
Yeah, right. That's modulate. What I'm learning right now.
Yeah, you got it.
Just think about when you were at the club and you had fun. I know you did. You know what I mean?
I did splits.
See what I'm saying? But we should be seeing those moments of that character the dance floor, probably just fucking loose and having a ball.
Yeah.
And when they leave out of there, then come little thugs outside fucking with them. You know what I mean?
So the positive, the light and the darkness.
You got to be showing it. So
okay.
We got one more?
Last one. Give your readers as much information as possible as soon as possible. To heck with suspense. Readers should have such a complete understanding of what is going on, where and why, that they can finish the story themselves should cockroaches eat the last few pages.
Okay. I agree with this and I disagree with this. And mainly it's because I like curiosity. So when I say this, I only mean within the first two or three pages, right? They have a little bit of mystery, a little bit of like, what is going on here?
Yeah.
You know what I mean? I want to, and then boom, page two or three, you're like, oh, that's what that was about. There's a big reversal. You know, something else is happening. So for me, I don't think you need to throw the whole kitchen sink in there and it's like, oh, the character wants to get the job at the whatever. Oh, he's blah, blah, blah. Oh, he's about to get a divorce. I don't need to know all that immediately, but I need to be on the ride of getting a sense that something is coming, something's coming, something's coming. Boom, there it is for me.
Well, okay, I agree with what you're saying, and I think this is a tough one to kind of digest because it kind of sounds
like... Yeah, we can talk about this all
day. Yeah, because it kind of essentially sounds like you want to tell me everything mm-hmm. up front. But I think it's like you know, he says give them as much information as soon as possible. Mm-hmm. That doesn't mean all at once right. because, for instance, let's take Star Wars, for example, the first mm-hmm. one. If you are watching that movie and I'm giving you the information, and let's say right after Ben Kenobi gets killed, mm-hmm. you know, like in the theater and you know, and the reels stop.
Right.
You can kind of figure out what that movie's going to, what's going to happen in that last act.
Yeah, sure.
You can kind of say they're going to, because they got the Death Star plans, mm-hmm. and they're going to go meet with the rebels. So they're going to actually destroy the Death Star. Mm-hmm. They're going to have to destroy the Death Star. But if you were like leaving out the fact, like I think the information is, imagine if you didn't know that R2-D2 had the Death Star plans mm-hmm. the whole time.
Right.
You're kind of like wondering, well, why are they're so careful about this droid? Why are they worrying about that? You know, because you don't have that information.
Yeah.
But yet that one piece, oh, he has the Death Star plans in him. Is giving you so much information because that's something you find out before you even see the Death Star.
Hmm.
The Death Star is like maybe another 40 minutes away before mm-hmm. you see it. And the minute you see it, you're like, oh, well, before the character, you see it before, but the characters see it. They're like, oh, shit, that moon that we think, that's not a moon, that's the fucking space station.
Hmm.
You're getting this, it's coming at the right moments. Right. Always give you, and you're thinking about the information, the suspense of curiosity is, that's just a good payoff, setup and payoff, good mm-hmm. set. Because the great setup and payoff, I set something up, I pay it off, and that payoff sets up the next payoff.
Right.
You know, a payoff becomes a setup in itself. That's at the right time, as soon as I can get it to you. It being just, and it's too early, it's bad.
Yeah.
Too late, it's bad. It's right, you got a time, like mm-hmm. every piece of information is going to be properly timed so right. that you are on the ride and stay on the ride.
And sometimes when you're writing, like I'll map it out. I'll be like, okay, you know, halfway through the script, we need to know this information. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. You can do that. You could spend your time looking at it and map it out about what you want to reveal. You
yeah.
know? You know, right here, I want to have a big reversal where the character is going to totally fall with this. Or I want to have a big, you know, moment where, you know, such and such happens. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. But you can map that shit out. You know, you put it on your board like you're starting to do. You on your yeah. wall. You know, he put it on his whole little wall and did his yeah. whole little thing.
I love it.
I did a wall. Yeah. I did a wall. Yeah.
Yeah.
And you can just map it out, and you can look at you. You have to learn to look at that board like a movie, you know. Just like when you're looking at your script, you have to look at your script and look at it. I actually look at my script and look up like I'm seeing it. I'm trying to visualize, you know, it as a movie. And if you can't see it as a movie, it's mm-hmm. fucking not a movie. You know what I mean?
True.
You can tell. You know, if a scene feels like it's going too long, it's like
pacing. This is just, pacing is. The, I mean, that's why I like to put on the wall too, because I can kind of like see how things are timing out right. in a big way.
Because
mm-hmm. you kind of know, like, oh, I mean, you mentioned Save the Cat earlier. I mean, as much as I don't, this is like care about those kind of like formalized beats, you got to have that structure in a way. But it's really all about rhythm.
Right.
You know, what's the rhythm of it? The audience gets like the tension in the story begins to fade at a certain point. So then you got to introduce new stuff, you know, and new stuff doesn't have to be a new story point, but it's like they find out something new that's about the main arc or all this kind of stuff, you know. It's like, oh, this is this. It's, you know, I mean, you just have to keep everyone's – it's all about worrying about attention span. And it, you guys mentioned the movie last night. You guys felt it was like a little long. And yeah, it's like, you know, and it's like
20 minutes.
Yeah, I mean, and the minute you, I was like, oh yeah, a drug dealer movie set in the '80s. I mean, there's been a lot of those that have come out from Blow and everything like that.
Gold.
I mean, you know, those movies to me, they always run long, and I don't know why that is. I always feel like they just feel like they're a little long somewhere in that second act, and I don't know why that is. But I just kind of feel like, oh, the minute you told me, I was that's why.
Everybody had to pee when the motherfucker was up.
You know, you know, and it's like that's.
It was good though.
Yeah, I mean, I'm not but those movies are always good. You do watch them, and you're like, they're fucking great. But then in a minute, you kind of say, ultimately, like, this is.
You feel it.
It just felt in your body, you know. In a movie that's not, you know, here's a great example. If you ever watch, here's a movie you put on your list. Amadeus.
Oh, love Amadeus.
Okay? I've seen Amadeus.
But have you seen
the white teacher in school?
But have you seen the director's cut?
No, I was old. It was like high school, middle school.
You need to watch it with your new eyes.
Okay, yeah.
I know.
As a filmmaker, as a writer.
Because it's one of the most brilliant movies everyone should see.
I love it.
But here's the thing. Amadeus, you watch that movie, and I love that movie. And it won like 6 or 7 Academy Awards. Mm-hmm. Fucking awesome ass movie, shit like this. But you go and you watch the director's cut, which is the theatrical cut is like 2 hours and 50 minutes, right? Mm-hmm. The director's cut is 3 hours and 10 minutes. So it's 20 minutes longer, right?
Yeah.
But it's a better movie at 3 hours and 20 minutes because there's stuff about his wife, Costanza, that you don't know about her character that just makes you think so differently about everybody. Salieri, just like, oh, shit. But then you say to yourself, he had to cut it out because of time. Mm-hmm. He had to cut it out because people, the attention span is like, that extra 20 minutes is hard, hard to keep.
And they'd have to cut it down even more now.
Yeah, they cut it down more now. But that movie, I mean, I remember watching it and I was like, this movie, I mean, I've seen it maybe 10, maybe 20 times. It's so good. But I've watched the director's cut twice and it's like, and the director's cut is, I think, the only version you can see on Amazon. Mm. It's not another thing, too. You can't see a lot of movies anymore because there's no more video stores. But,
yeah, that's what makes it hard for me.
Yeah, it's a very select thing to see where the pacing, where he's juggling pacing with story and he ultimately said, I'm gonna give the audience what they want as opposed to what I want.
Right.
But fans of the movie who know what the movie is can go watch the longer film and be like, oh fuck! But if you haven't seen it, then you gotta like you have to trim it down. Brilliant movie, by the way.
Yeah.
Brilliant fucking movie.
Yeah, well, good episode. I'm probably going to break this up in two because we're almost at 2 hours on this motherfucker.
Yeah.
So where are you at, Jatani?
I am on Twitter as Jasani Drew, which is J-E-S as in Sam, A-N as in Nancy, I, last name Drew as in Drew Barrymore. yes.
He's practicing that shit.
No, I do this. This is how I introduce stuff. Like, my name is Jasani, like the water with a J. That's exactly how I say my name every time. And on Instagram, I'm Visionary Alignment. On Facebook, my name is Jasani Drew.
That's what's up. Where you at, Chris?
I am Unauthorized CBD on Twitter and Instagram.
All right. And I am your host, Hilliard Guest. You guys can find me on Twitter at Hilliard Guest. You guys can follow the show, Screenwriters Rant Room at Gmail. Oh, follow the show, Screenwriters RR. I can't even talk straight. Please, if you have any questions, ScreenwritersRantRoom@gmail.com. Please go on iTunes, Stitcher, Apple Podcasts, whatever you guys listen to. Give us a 5-star review. We need that for the metrics. Please share, post, whatever, our new Patreon page, Screenwriters.
Screenwriters Rent Room. Well, the link for it is in the show notes.
Yeah, please support the show. We appreciate that shit. Hope you guys enjoyed this episode. Shout out to Lisa, wherever you are, little girl.
Love you.
and y'all know how we do it on the Rent Room. On the show, we keep it real. We keep it opinionated. We keep it what, everybody?
Black Panther's Quest.
Peace, y'all.
I'ma say what I feel, and I promise to keep it real.
Welcome to the Red Room.
Well, you gotta be a rider till your fears are diminishing, the doubts are behind ya. It's hard to grind and the business got me stressed. In the rent room, we let that shit up off our chest. You know the street nerd has got no time for no caca. Sass in class, yes, that's Mr. Bolakaja. Never have to guess when you're listening to Hilliard. He gon' bring more game than a shark playing billiards. It's all about the crap of screenwriting. It's exciting when you turn an outline into something enlightening. Your pen and words are like bullets in a gun. Write what you feel, say what you want.
Welcome to the Red Room.